There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 857, November 2nd, 2020. Nasser?
Grazie, signor. I say funiculi, funicula, Formula One back at Imola. And now back to El Jefe in California.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, who is the luckiest man in Formula One? Is LCH becoming a very lonely man? And how long can Max take it? We've got more from Gary Sloan in thepitlane.com. And quickly, I want to remind you that, yes, we need your contributions to keep this program on the servers. Just go to the F1 Weekly front page and click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Well, I'm doing very good. Thank you for asking. What a fantastic Grand Prix we had, especially the second half, beautiful circuit. I was lucky enough to be there once. I think it was 2004. And just so happy to see races at Mugello, Portimao, Imola, and now the Pasha Grand Prix is coming, you know, a Turkish delight. So I'm very happy. And as far as the result is concerned, man, Bottas had a great takeoff and fantastic performance in quali, and then LCH is third, and I'm thinking, is he going to stay there? And then I said, maybe I should call Clark Rogers. He always has an update on his favorite driver. So, question is, Mr. Rogers, what else is new?
Nothing is new. Everything is old, except for Gasly is not too happy. Max is not happy. There's a lot of unhappiness at Red Bull and AlphaTauri, but there's a lot of happiness at Renault and Fernando visiting Imola and reminiscing of his machismo-ness.
Yes, he is the new Alpine ace. Shall we take a quick look at Colisa?
My favorite.
Well, I don't know if you watch Colli live, but LCH was looking good for pole position number 98. So I would like to see him get 100 at least in terms of poles. But on his final lap in qualifying, the wingman was flying and shot him down. And you know, the more races Lewis wins, the more chances are that Valtteri Bottas' number will come up soon. How soon? That I don't know. And Lewis called his own final qualifying lap as pretty piss poor. And these three words, pretty piss poor, is really the problem of Valtteri Bottas. When you have a driver is putting on a pretty piss poor performance by his own admission, and he's still starting next to you, then you know he is. He's not a fully loaded burrito, but he's a fully loaded racing talento. So we do appreciate that. Now, row 2 was Honda-powered. Very impressive, but not Max and Albon, but Max and Gasly. The Monza winner is surprised he was not promoted to mothership, as the only other driver who won for the team, and these are his own words, was promoted and went on to deliver 4 straight championships. Now, I like Gasly. He's a very nice driver. He's a nice kid, but this kind of comparison calls for a what I call a Lloyd Benson sling and arrow, and goes like this: Monsieur Gasly, you are an excellent driver, but you are not SVK. Do you agree with me, Mr. Rogers?
Of course, he's getting a little excited. He should be happy that he's in Formula One next year, guaranteed, unlike Hulkenberg or Perez, who are immensely talented as well.
And he should be thankful for Dr. Marco for not re-promoting him to Red Bull, because I just do not see him beating Max on a regular basis. Because if Max slaughters you second time, right now he has a chance, he might go to Alpine and be the numero uno. But if he gets slaughtered by Max twice, then it will be all over. So I think it's a blessing in disguise. He just doesn't appreciate it at this time. Now, Daniel Ricciardo on row 3 with Renault, with Alexander Albon. And poor Albon, man. He is fighting his own siege of Leningrad and still almost half a second slower than teammate. And the social media and the interweb is just buzzing with flies like in a Bangkok flea market, that he should be given the chop chop. But we shall see. I think, and if you can think of more, we can add those people here, but I think there are two people who would love to see Albon not half a second, but one full second slower than Max. And these two people are Sergio Perez and Nico Hülkenberg. They are waiting for the axe to fall so they can climb the wall and get into a plum Formula One seat. What say you on the Alex Albon situation, sir?
It's over. Alex is over. I mean, I feel bad for the kid, but listen, too bad. That's life. That's Formula One. But you know what? They kept Gasly. I mean, we know Kvyat's going to be gone, but what I heard after finding out what's going on at Alfa Romeo, I'm not saying anything about anything. Albon, as far as I'm concerned, could sign another contract next week and be on the grid for another 5 years. Anything is possible in Formula One.
Yes, that is very, very true. And you know, let's not forget, Red Bull, main partner, actually, you know, the Red Bull itself was a formula taken by Dietrich Mateschitz from a Thai business, and they are backing him, so it won't be very easy to do a chop-chop on him. So let's see what happens, okay? Now, Charles Leclerc was 7th on the grid, only Ferrari in Q3. Torpedo was 8th, his first Q3 appearance since Mexico last year. Now, 9 races in a row, this is really bad, but I'm still hopeful. 9 races in a row that Bastian has failed to reach Q3. Hard to believe this guy has faded so fast this season, but we shall see next season if Binotto and Leclerc had put a spell on him, or is he really past his sell-by date? If he is beaten by Lance Stroll next season at Aston Martin, then for sure he will prove me wrong, and it will be time to go curling with Papa Lawrence in Switzerland, where the Strolls and the Vittels reside. So we shall see. Now, there is also a lot of talk that Ferrari is purposely basically making him fail. Sebastian not giving him the right car and all that kind of stuff. These teams spend a lot of money. I'm not buying this. I think maybe he's just lost his mojo or just do not feel comfortable with the whole environment. But do you buy this conspiracy theory that Ferrari is making him look bad on purpose?
No, I don't believe any of that. And it's very disappointing when you see that kind of behavior at this level of the professional motorsports world. Not only that, but Ricciardo, who is not going to be at Renault, it's been, you know, he has decided to go to McLaren next year, and we've known that for a long time. Yet, Ricciardo reaches down and does 110% at every race, even though he will not be driving for Renault next season. Even though McLaren will be maybe better than Renault, but maybe not. Ricciardo is the perfect example of what you're supposed to behave like. And I thank goodness for Ricciardo.
So what you're saying that you have a 3-year contract, you should not fly to an airport and refuse to get out of your private jet so you can sign a contract with the lawyers of your team that they release you early. Is that what you're trying to say, Mr. Rogers?
Exactly.
We're not taking any names here. Privacy is important at F1 Weekly once in a while. Okay, sir, now question for you as we move forward to the race, the Gran Premio. My question for you, sir, is back in the day we had Lucky Luciano. These days and for the immediate future, we have Lucky Lewis. Now, when he dropped down to third, did you think that this is Bottas's finest hour?
Well, I mean, you have to give it to the luckiest man in the world that occasionally he won't be lucky. Occasionally, he's going to have a bad day. I mean, Bottas cannot possibly absorb all the bad days, the bad karma, the debris, the phantom debris. But apparently he does. Even Mercedes couldn't believe that Bottas was wounded and had a problem. They just thought it was another Bottas problem. But in the end, I mean, let's face it. LCH knows he's the luckiest man in the world. Toto knows that LCH is the luckiest man in the world. And we all saw it on television. And you could replay the tape. The guy is putting in big time laps. He needs tires desperately. And what happens? Not only does the virtual safety car get called, but it happens at the exact second Hamilton needed it. Not 2 seconds, 1 second. All of a sudden, it came up and his exit was there. I'm telling you, the Jesus loves the Hamilton.
Well said, well said. Well, you know, when the chips are down, the lucky ones rise up to the occasion to create and grab the opportunity in this community. And that's what he did with Lipton Tea. And as far as Bottas is concerned, I can only think of a line from a Elton John song, which I may have used before, so my apologies for copyright to EMI and Sony Music or whoever has the rights. As a line from the song is,
"What do I do when lightning strikes me?
What do I do when lightning strikes me?" And the lightning bolt for Bottas is named Lewis. Now, you know, it was amazing that some years ago it was in Baku that Bottas ran over a piece of debris and had a flat tire and lost a sure win, okay? And here after the race, he said he did saw the debris, but it was too late. So his choice was to go over it or run his tire over the debris. So he took the safe route, which at least allowed him to stay in the race. But apparently there was quite a bit of damage. During the Sky telecast, Ted Kravis reported that debris has been lodged in his barge board and affecting downforce. And I was watching a post-race show and Toto Wolff was describing how big the piece was. So, you know, I'll give it to him this time. This time he had a valid excuse for not winning a race. There's another race coming up soon and we'll find out what happens. But it has to suck real bad for him when he's on pole and still cannot win. That has to get to him. And you know what really is interesting, Mr. Rogers? I'm a keen observer because I love Formula One, as we all do. As close as Max runs to Bottas, I just wonder what this kid will do if he was teammate to Lewis Hamilton. Okay? I'm a very strong believer that right now, Max is, even after being in Formula One for a few years, he is where Ayrton Senna was in 1984, his first year, where Michael Schumacher was in his first full season of Formula One. The new man, the new cage rattler, he just does not have the package to deliver. And that's very, very sad for Nigel Racing. Now, lap 36 of 63, Kimi and Seb were still running on tires they started on, so which was, you know, they had moved up the grid. But four laps later, spaghetti culture cooking al dente when Seb came for tire change, But you know, Love left town for Seb at that team long time ago, so no surprise here. Lap 43, second lockup by Bottas was all the invitation Max needed to grab second. And I like the way he went on radio, second. Now this lap in the lead, more luckiness for your favorite driver. Lap 43 being in the lead made Lewis Carl Hamilton only the second driver to lead 5,000 laps in Formula 1. And I think the number is another dozen laps in the lead, which probably will happen at the next race in Turkey. He will surpass another of Michael Schumacher's many, many unbelievable records. So quite a day and quite a season for him. A healthy season for LCH in these sad times of COVID-19. Lap 46, Kimi was fourth, still running on original tires. And this was very rarely do we see this in Formula 1. K-Mag, Kevin Magnussen, was reporting headache from upshift. Team asked him if he wanted to call in sick, but K-Mag decided to continue, but did call it quits on lap 49. Same lap, Kimi Raikkonen came in for new tires, coming out behind Boy George, who I really, really wanted to see get a point. George Russell was running 11th and still hoping for a Karma Chameleon and his first ever point in Formula 1 motor racing. And on lap 51, he got his wish as Max was found in kitty litter. Christian Horner described this as instant done blowed up. Now, camera just went to Max during the telecast after he had spun. I knew he was not running very competitive to the, you know, Lewis Hamilton situation. So I thought maybe somebody hit him or something broke. What was your initial reaction?
Oh, I knew it was a tire failure. That's why I run Michelins personally, expanding Michelins preferably.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you're on a road trip to Budapest, right?
Absolutely.
Yes. And yeah, this was the lucky moment for LCH.
Wait a minute. It was what?
Lucky moment.
Wow. Those are so few and far between.
Yes. Because most of the time he's leading anyway from pole position. Anyway, red tires for many drivers, including the Benz boys. Now, 10 laps to go behind the safety car, George Russell went into the wall of voodoo all on his own. By the side of the track, he was having a Mika-like moment from Monza. He is claiming this is his biggest mistake in his racing life. And of course, if he was Maldonado, he would be saying something like, "This is one of my many mistakes in racing, so no big deal." But nice to know that George Russell is getting a lot of love and support on social media from Lewis Hamilton and Romain Grosjean. And Romain Grosjean should know what he's talking about, crashing on his own and into other people. Was that a big letdown for you that Williams and George Russell denied a championship point, which was right there for the taking?
Well, I feel so terrible for Russell, for George, but the biggest problem with a lot of these young drivers, and I know it's going to get bad, especially since now we know that Toto and Lewis are coming back next year stronger and better to dominate for another two or three more years. And I feel terrible for all these young drivers because just like Norris had to apologize for being a young smart aleck and insulting Lewis Hamilton for winning so many world championships and races, blah, blah, blah. He apologized and he apologized publicly. But what's going on is all these young drivers know that until the plumber dies or leaves the building, they have no chance of not even... It's a sad state of affairs when your goal in Formula One is to maybe score a single point when it should be winning a championship. But I'm afraid, and I'm telling you, Max is in big trouble. People mock me and laugh at me, but with nobody agreeing to the engine freeze that Toto wanted to agree to help and facilitate Red Bull with their engine building endeavors, I'm afraid Max is going to be a number two for a long time.
Well, quite a few things you have said there, and let me address a few of them. And, you know, I don't want to get involved in people's opinions on other people. We just want to focus on the racing part. You know, I have followed Lando Norris's career from the very first time he got into single-seater racing, which was British Formula 4. We did an interview with him at that time. Series was called Formula MSA in those days. He took part in 6 championships. 5 of them he won. The only one he did not win was the GP2 / Formula 2, and he was beaten comprehensively by George Russell on that deal. So I'm a big fan of Lando Norris, as I was for Romain and Nico Hülkenberg, based on their junior career. But I have to say, you know, I wish him all the best and everybody, but I was expecting Lando Norris to rattle the cage, if not in his first year at McLaren against Carlos Sainz, but completely take over the situation. And you know, that has not happened. Okay? So which tells me, because I know Lando is a good driver, that Carlos Sainz is also a very good driver, which I already knew based on his junior career. So in order to get into a top team, you have to perform. I mean, how many examples I can give? You cannot take 2-3 years to announce you have arrived. If you're not even blowing away your teammate, then, you know, the door will not open at Mercedes or any of the winning cars of the time you were talking about. But I have to say this. When they took Bottas, I am sure if the next Lewis Hamilton was on the radar at that time, Toto would have taken. And as far as the Max's situation is concerned, me, like everybody else, I would love to see him as teammate Lewis, which we all know is not going to happen. Second best thing is Red Bull gives him a car, but now with their engine partner leaving, so it's just a question mark. But there is already a school of thought out there, and I've heard this from many, that they will not be surprised what is already being said about Daniel Ricciardo, that both of these guys may never win a world championship with all the talent they have. And I think that would be a shame for motor racing if Ricciardo, and on top of that, Verstappen race for 10 years and not being in the best package, close but no cigars. But let's hope. But you have to understand, Mr. Rogers, you make your own luck. When Max was being approached by Mercedes, Ferrari and Red Bull, the main reason they went there is Red Bull told them, Jos, we'll put him in Formula 1 next year. It's very hard to say no to somebody who's offering you a Formula 1 ride, but if you have an offer from Ferrari and Mercedes, then you know you got a very hot potato on your hand. I don't know if he had gone with Mercedes and... See, the thing is, if he had gone with Mercedes, Toto would have probably put him in a Formula 2 for a season or something. And no matter what you do in Formula 2 or Formula 3, they would always say, well, let's see how good he is in Formula 1. And then if they had brought him straight into Mercedes as a teammate to Lewis, then a lot of people, including Lewis, would have been surprised. And Lewis would have gotten a taste of his own medicine. Oh, this is the syrup I gave to somebody in 2007. Now I'm getting it back. So that's my two Dutch guilders on the Max Verstappen situation. Your thoughts?
Well, you're right. The only thing, like I said, is there's nothing wrong with not winning a world championship. Like you said before, Gilles Villeneuve will always be the machismo that he was without a world championship. Many more drivers as well. So not a big deal. It's just that when you have possible scenarios that you're desperately hoping you could see in your lifetime that won't pan out, que será, será, what will be, and of course, most people will get their kicks in the virtual internet racing that I don't participate in.
Yes, I have also no interest in that. Okay, now, going back to the race, Daniel Ricciardo stayed out to get on podium slot. He dodged the torpedo till the end, who was on fresher and faster tires. And, you know, I'm watching this the last few laps, and I'm thinking, you know, it would be fantastic if Daniel Kvyat in a AlphaTauri can get a podium. That would be very good. His teammate got a win, so he should at least get a podium. But on the other hand, I was thinking, man, if Ricciardo gets podium, we might see a shoey, because he forgot last time. So it was good that Daniel got the podium, but immediately he was told by team principal Cyril Abitbol, I am not getting a second tattoo. So that was it. Now, safety car in for a 5-lap mad dash. This was the last chance, if there was a chance in this race, to take the win from LCH. Lap 63 over, and LCH takes win number 93, and Mercedes sets a new record, 7 consecutive Constructors' Championship. Talk about super uber Deutschen domination. As we have said before, going back a century, they have always cleaned everyone's clock in due course of time. And it was nice to see male bonding between Toto and Lewis in Park Fermé. I enjoyed that. Kimi was voted driver of the race, which was interesting also. Both alphas in the points, as Father Guido Sarducci of Motorsports, also known as Giovinazzi, finished 10th behind Kimi. And I was very surprised that both these youths have been confirmed. And it's obvious that Ferrari wants to keep a Paisan in Formula 1. So now the focus is Mick Schumacher. He has only one place to go, because Williams, after not feeling very comfortable about their drivers, they have confirmed Latifi and Russell will stay. So it's just a matter of time before Mick Schumacher's name comes back to Formula 1. So that's good. Now, I really, really enjoyed the second half of the race. But I hate to say this, I do love a motor race on these old school circuits and not what Carlos Reutemann described as computer-generated tracks. And when they were playing God Save the Queen, Mr. Rogers, this is the most important point. I was wondering how soon will it be before we see a Mercedes Grand Prix driver and world champion by the name of Sir Lewis Hamilton. Now that will get some people going. Would you like to see, would you like to go to a Grand Prix and then tell your family, yeah, Sir Lewis Hamilton was on pole position?
I suppose.
And then in the race, he got lucky and he won.
In a Mercedes, don't forget, he only drives Mercedes. No funny stuff for him.
Yeah, all his Grand Prix wins have been powered by Mercedes. And man, you know, you remember our friend Mr. Martin Hines, who has passed away? I was once told by a very serious racing insider that Martin Hines was the guy who called Ron Dennis and told him that there is this kid who does not have a lot of money behind him. You should take a look at him, because if this guy gets out of racing, it will be a crying shame. And Ron Dennis, on record, said, I'll send some people to look at this kid. They did. And the report Ron Dennis got was very impressive. So they called Hamilton and Papa Hamilton. And they said, okay, we'll take care of the expenses on two conditions. Stay in school and keep delivering on the track. And LCH has been doing the second part. I don't know how long he had to stay in school, but incredible. Absolutely. You may have all the luck, but you still have to do the business. So I'm glad I'm seeing all this happening in my lifetime. And final thoughts from you on the race, sir?
No, it was exciting. I just appreciated looking at Imola. I loved every minute of it. And I was glad Fernando was there. He did a nice interview with Martin Brundle. It was great. And it's funny, because when George Russell was sitting under the bush on the side of the track after he crashed his car behind the pace car, I mean, it was such a Mika Hakkinen moment that I came up, I said, this is a Hakkinen moment. And then a minute later, Brundle said it was a Hakkinen moment. And anybody who has watched Formula One for a long time knows the Hakkinen moment.
Yes, and you will not believe this, and I'm glad you said this. What I do, you know, when the race starts, I have my iPhone and I, you know, the Google Doc, I do my Motorsports Mondial and the race report. I just write some important stuff. And when I saw him being, sitting there and crying or whatever, I put, you know, having his Mika Hakkinen moment. And exactly around that time, Martin Brundle said the same thing. So racing fans are the same, you know, whether they are Grand Prix drivers or sitting in Maryland or California or Congo Republic. So it's beautiful. It's a beautiful sport, and I love the people involved in it.
Good for you, Nass. And speaking of love and people, why don't we hear the latest from Gary Sloan in thepitlane.com.
Hello, listeners. My name is Gary Sloan, and this is this week's edition of In the Pit Lane. So Lawrence Stroll once again proves to be the consummate dealmaker with the announcement last week that Mercedes-AMG was involved in a new £1.3 billion refinancing package for Aston Martin. Lawrence, who had previously put together his U3 consortium to purchase Aston Martin, knew the company did not have enough cash to survive the next 12 months. With a falling share price, he needed to act fast after the pandemic sent losses north of £227 million in the first half of 2020, as Aston Martin sold only 1,770 cars. Stroll has put together a deal that includes issuing £1.2 billion in new debt and bringing on board new shareholders Zeldo Holdings and Permian Investment Partners with an investment of £125 million. Mercedes joined the party, providing £286 million worth of hybrid and electric vehicle technology in exchange for increasing its stake from 2.3% to a whopping 20%. The net result is Aston Martin will have a cash pile of more than £500 million, and Stroll will maintain his position as the largest shareholder. Talk about coming up smelling of roses. Aston Martin, who under Stroll had abandoned its plans to build its first electric vehicle, now has Daimler's expertise and aims to manufacture 3,000 hybrid vehicles in 2024 and electric vehicles in 2026. The thing is, Mercedes' involvement did not happen overnight, and it becomes clearer now why it was important for Racing Point to sign a German driver. Step forward four-time champion, Sebastian Vettel. Vettel, like Wolff, has purchased shares in Aston Martin, with Vettel claiming to have bought a few shares, and Wolff buying a stake worth £37 million. The thing is, the Aston Martin F1 team needs a financially successful Aston Martin car business, as they are to provide £40 million a year in sponsorship in a five-year deal. Place this figure in context, Aston Martin sponsors the Red Bull F1 team to the tune of £50 million a season, so a substantial increase, especially given the current financial climate. It's also unclear if title sponsor BWT will continue with their estimated £7.5 million sponsorship, as the car's livery will no doubt be in racing green, therefore negating the BWT pink branding. To sell the deal, Stroll convinced the other shareholders that the global spotlight of Formula One is second to none, and we will leverage this reach to showcase the Aston Martin brand in our key markets. It gives us the chance to meet and greet our customers at 22 race locations, show them our new models, and get them to experience what a weekend's like for the world of Aston Martin. So Vettel and Stroll Jr. can expect many a corporate function and PR appearance in 2021 onwards. In pursuit of this strategy, Stroll has again produced the rabbit out of the hat with the appointment of Jefferson Slack, the former marketing chief for basketball star Michael Jordan and CEO of Inter Milan Football Club, as his new commercial managing director. So it's looking good for Stroll and his ambitious plans for both the car business and the team. But wait a minute, he may have to use all his business skills to fend off a potential predator. Mercedes' parent company, Daimler AG, is always assumed to be German-owned, but in fact 35.97% of its stock is held by four American investment banks and hedge funds. Stroll's competition comes in the shape of Li Shufi, the Chinese billionaire owner of Geely Automobile, which amongst others owns the Volvo and Lotus brands. Shufi is Daimler's largest single shareholder, owning 9.69% of Daimler, and he may have plans to accelerate Mercedes' minority ownership of Aston Martin into a majority holding, pitting him head-to-head with Stroll. Shufi, like all billionaires, likes to get his own way, and after Daimler rejected a proposal by Geely to acquire a stake or reach a technology-sharing deal, Shufi set up a separate shell company, Tenacious 3 Investment Holdings, to purchase the shareholding under the radar, so to speak. He will also no doubt receive the backing of the People's Republic of China, who own 5% of Daimler. So interesting times ahead. On a footnote, rumours abound in the paddock that Red Bull's Adrian Newey, on the back of Honda's withdrawal, may be poached by Stroll. Dr. Marco, in attempting to explain the speculation, told Sport One that Adrian was recently able to test a rare Aston Martin, and he thanked Stroll for it, There's nothing more. Well, it's all a bit reminiscent of Vettel denying his move to Racing Point when he was spotted in Racing Point CEO's Otmar Schaffer's vintage Ferrari, with Vettel claiming he was only interested in the car. Well, that's it for another week. More details at inthepitlane.com. Until next week, stay safe, stay well.
Thanks, Gary. Keep up the good work. Why don't we take a quick break, and we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, I'm Juan Pablo Montoya, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And you know, talking of Mika moment, let me share my Mika moment when I met him last year at Laguna Seca. It was, you know, I only had 10 minutes to talk to him, but I was thinking of asking him about that Monza moment and what I was going to do since we like music. I was going to ask him if he had ever heard a song, I'm Not in Love from 10cc, and there's a line in that song, big boys don't cry, big boys don't cry.
Be quiet, big boys don't cry, big boys don't cry, big boys don't cry, big boys don't cry.
But hopefully we'll see him at some other track and do some more motorsports chit-chat. Okay, sir. Shall we start with some Historia di Imola? Yes, sir. And this track has been pleasing the racing fans, especially the Domestici Paisan, for many years now. Beautiful circuit located not too far from the factory, Ferrari factory. There have been a few non-championship Formula One races at Imola. Jim Clark winning in the 1960s. And Niki Lauda also won, I think it was in 1979, in a Brabham powered by Alfa Romeo. In 1980, Imola hosted the Italian Grand Prix, the only time it was not staged at Monza. And that race was won by Nelson Piquet, the senior, not the crasher, in a Brabham. And the following year, he won the first ever San Marino Grand Prix. We all know what happened at Tamburello on the dark weekend of 1994. Before that, in 1987, Nelson Piquet had a heavy crash at the same corner, and in 1989, Gerhard Berger crashed there in his Ferrari and burst into flame. And I remember watching the both of these, and the Berger crash was very, very scary because the car, you know, burst into flame, and it was a few seconds before the marshals got to him. Two drivers scored their first Grand Prix wins at Imola, Heinz Harald Frentzen for Williams in 1997 and his Deutschen compadre Ralf Schumacher with the same team in 2001. And 2001 was Williams' first win with BMW power. And that love between Mario Tyson and Patrick Head and Frank did not last too long. The track is also known for two flashpoints between teammates. Ferrari drivers Gilles Villeneuve and Didier Pironi from the 1982 race and Ayrton Senna and Prost of McLaren 6 years later. Now this was the McLaren situation was one for the Effie Baileys and Johnny Cochran's of the world. The agreement between Senna and Prost was that whoever got to the first corner will lead the race, at least for the first lap. They did not want to tangle. Okay, so that was the deal. So the race started. I think Senna was on pole, and Prost got to the first corner, and Senna let him go. Shortly thereafter, the race was red flagged on the opening lap. Now, when the race restarted, Senna grabbed the lead going into the first corner, and Prost later complained that we had an agreement, and Senna said, well, the agreement was at the start of the race, not the restart. So this is for the lawyers of the world to decide. But the machismo moment of Imola was in 2005. And here you have to help me, Mr. Rogers. When a young Spanish driver, I can't seem to find his name nor face in my mind right now, but he held off the Red Baron to claim an amazing victory. Now, Ayrton Senna, I looked this up, Mr. Rogers, because I knew he had taken a lot of pole positions at Imola. He started his final race at Imola from pole position, and I was just looking on Wikipedia, and looks like from 1985 to 1994, he was on pole at Imola every year except for 92-93. when Williams had a car that Lewis has now. You know what I'm saying?
Bravo.
Now we go to drivers wanted. Pierre Gasly, as we talked about, has been confirmed at AlphaTauri for next season, and his teammate will be announced after the young driver's test in Abu Dhabi. Smart Yen is on Yuki Tsunoda, the Honda-supported F2 driver. His rookie season in F2 has been far more impressive than Mick Schumacher's rookie season last year. So this kid is quick, but he's a little erratic. But, you know, practice makes you perfect, or so they say. We need to have a Japanese Grand Prix winner. We've never had a Grand Prix winner from the continent of Asia, so it's about time. Now, speaking of Mick Schumacher, he was all set to partner Kimi at Sauber, but now it's just a matter of time before we hear that he has been signed by Gunther Steiner. Now, that is the news that I'm really interested in hearing is who will be his teammate. The other seat may go to a Trustafarian, Nikita Mazepin. Nothing like a Russian billionaire doing business with an American billionaire. What do you think? Who do you think will get the second seat there? If Nikita gets this seat, then the only way for Perez to get into stay in Formula One would be Toro Rosso or Red Bull. So what is Mr. Rogers' prediction?
I predict that Nikita won't be in and Hulkenberg will.
Where? At Haas?
Yes.
Well, let me tell you, Nikita's Papito has billions and billions of dollars. And these days, that's more important than the talent of Nico Hulkenberg or Sergio Perez. But time will tell. We're almost getting there. Now, sir, this next item is very, very important. And I find it absolutely amazing. Everybody has the right to their opinion. No problem there. But with all the issues we have, obviously, we all have our priorities, I guess. So there is the story here. Morning has broken in Mongolia, and the ambassador has spoken. No, this is not a new hit from Cat Stevens.
Morning has broken like the first morning.
The Mongolian ambassador to the United Nations has complained to the FIA, Red Bull, and Aston Martin about Max's use of the word Mongol to describe Lance Stroll during the Portuguese Grand Prix weekend. Well, I'm very pleased to know that Formula One is being watched in Ulaanbaatar, capital of Mongolia. The message is clear, Mr. Rogers. Henceforth, I shall refrain from referring to you as the Genghis Khan of podcasting, or the horde will be coming for the palatial studios. And we don't have enough sentries there, do we?
No, that would be a formidable problem.
Yes, and we have cute pit popsies there like Desiree, but, you know, she'll be no match for the Mongolian horde. Any thoughts on this, that this thing has gone to that level? And I was like shocked. I'm like, are you serious?
Unbelievable. But in this day and age, it is 2020. This is the strangest year, but not so strange where Lewis Hamilton would lose Lady Luck. He's still a lucky guy, so Hamilton is good in 2020. But a lot of people, you better watch out. Instead of, what is up with Lance Stroll anyway, you know? What's his problem? Lately, he's not been driving very well, and a lot of people are starting to say, as Toto Wolff said, his stigma is wealth. I don't think wealth could be a stigma, period. That's not possible. But getting back to Mongols and Mongolia, hey, half of this world didn't even know that we had a Mongolian government. So there you go. I think this is great, great free advertisement for the tourism trade in Mongolia.
Okay, well, see, we have a new problem now. You're saying they had no government. So are you calling them lawless bandits? Is that what you're saying, Mr. Rogers?
No, they are not Zapatas. I'm sure that they're fine people. And once I check my mail and I have a first class ticket to the capital of Mongolia so I can go find out for myself, I will keep all my opinions to myself.
Well, let me put a positive spin on it. My favorite Chinese meal has been always Mongolian beef with steamed rice.
But What's your Mongolian neighbor's favorite meal?
I'll have to ask them. You know, I have my ideas, but I don't want to say things that will get me in trouble.
There you go. And that's what Max has to think about. Saying things that will get you in trouble. All of a sudden, now the top team doesn't want you because you have a potty mouth.
Yeah, and you know, earlier you mentioned about Lando Norris apologizing to Lewis Hamilton and some other driver also, right? I mean, he didn't say anything nasty or anything. I think what he said was that he has the best car or something. He didn't say that he didn't even call him a lucky guy, like a world-famous podcaster does all the time. But it's just, everybody's so touchy now, you know.
Well, the problem is, it's exacerbated for the drivers because they're in the paddock. They have to see Lewis go up on the podium in the top step, race after race. If it's not Lewis, it's Bottas. I mean, after a while, you know who has the best car. Oh, you mean the guy who's winning more championships than anybody in the world? Yes, he has the best car. And if you don't like it, too bad. But that's just the way it is. Some of these young whippersnappers, the first thing they think is, well, if I had that car, I'd be world champion. I'd be winning. It's so easy to say that, and it's normal and a natural reaction. Just means you're a healthy young person.
Yes, you know, and Toto Wolff said it best. Lewis isn't the best car because he's the best driver. And you know, all these drivers, I'm not going to take names, who think they can win races in their car. Most probably anybody on the grid can win. I would agree to that. But you know what? If you're that good, why don't you blow away your teammate? And that's the first indicator that you are machismo. Do you remember when Alonso was driving a Minardi? He had a teammate, and there was a huge difference between the time between the two in a Minardi. So people just knew that even if you drive a Minardi, you can be machismo.
But he was machismo because he was extra, extra fast. But he didn't have the timing and the lucky dog. But he was still fast and did good with just being fast. Now, if you could be fast, lucky, not have a potty mouth, and no Toto Wolff and other Germans, you're really lucky.
It's such amazing when you hear these numbers. For me, just as a simple lifelong Formula One fan, nothing more, nothing less. For me to see, I mean, I've seen a lot of these things, you know, Ronnie Peterson has his accident, loses his life, gone, okay? Sad, but true. Emerson Fittipaldi wins 2 championships in 3 years, and then he joins his brother's team, and, you know, end of his F1 greatness. But to think that you can have a, like my friend used to remind me, who was a big Michael Schumacher fan, that Schumacher won number of championships in a row that Fangio won in his entire career, which was very, very hard to believe, but it was there. And a guy comes and overthrows him, and since then, he has never won a championship. 2006, after back-to-back. And since then, a driver who came into Formula One as his rookie teammate, that man today basically has 7 championships. And what is even more scary, he now has, thanks to the win on lucky win on Sunday, he now has more wins than Senna and Prost combined. I mean, that's you can win 4, 5, maybe 10, 15 races by being lucky. You cannot win 93 races just on pure luck. That I'm not buying.
The other thing that's so great about Schumacher and Fernando, and I've stated this before, especially Fernando, he has won with Renault. He has won Grand Prix with Ferrari at Monza in front of the Tifosi. You know, he's won great races in different packages. He has been able to spread it out. I find that a little more exciting because the drivability of like a Ferrari compared to a Mercedes are very, very different. You know, we're talking different animals completely. And to be able to take that beast and win a Grand Prix and do it in a different beast, I think it's fantastic. I mean, I'm happy for Lewis to stick with Mercedes because, well, they've been good to him and they've got that team. I mean, they've got their mapping and Lewis Hamilton together is so synchronized and works so well, there's no reason to mess it up. But I think deep down, I think Lewis Hamilton would like to have a Grand Prix win in a Ferrari, or at least another country's motor. Let's not say another company. And I know it's a new world order, blah, blah, blah. But still, I still think that Lewis Hamilton, deep down, would like to win a Grand Prix in a different motor.
Yes, and you know, talking of Nando, he won his second ever race with McLaren in Malaysia, which was very impressive. And when he won the Italian Grand Prix at Monza in 2007, Moi was there, and that was a very, very impressive victory. But man, I'm going to tell you, if you want to see intense, and we're not taking sides here, if you want to see intense competition between two great drivers, check out the U.S. Grand Prix 2007. I mean, unbelievable, Fernando Alonso and Lewis Hamilton. Absolutely, simply, thunderingly marvelous.
To the last lap.
Exactly. And driving to the pit wall. Oh, just the heat of the moment, the pressure. And that's motor racing at its finest, man. That's what we want.
That's what we want. And why aren't they giving it to us?
Well, we need two top dogs. Or two hungry tigers at the Brackley Zoo, which is Mercedes AMG or AMG in plain simple English. And that's what we want. And you know what really is disappointing? Even though there were several drivers in the last 2 years in Formula 3 and Formula 2 who I was expecting will explode on the scene and rattle everybody's cage, and we will have a new LCH or a new Minimax, but none of them have panned out so far. So I don't see any in the next couple of layers of GP2, Formula 2, Formula 3, or even in Formula 4. You know, another good thing with the internet, I mean, you can even watch Spanish Formula 4. I'm watching all the time Formula Renault races, and I don't care if the race is in Spanish or Dutch or Tagalog. I mean, as long as it's racing cars moving fast, I is interested. But I just don't see a real standout, Grand Prix driver in the next couple of years. There are these two kids, you know, Kimi Antonelli, who I think is like, I've known about this kid for a few years, and he may not be a teenager even now, but he's very young. He's in karting, and he's under the wings of Toto Wolff. And there is this American kid of Nigerian descent, Ugo Chukwu, who won the Junior Karting World Championship. But you know, karting, you have to come into single-seater racing and carry on the same way. So I'm looking for a breakout, somebody who can break on through the other side.
Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side.
Kind of driver. And that's what's going to galvanize me in my AARP. Starry, starry night days, Mr. Rogers.
Well, thank you for that, Nasser. Keep up the good work. I think that everything's going to be fine. We'll just have to live with LCH for a few more years, and that'll be that. I do want to thank everybody who listens to the program. Send us your email. It's simple, clark@f1weekly.com, nasser@f1weekly.com, info@f1weekly.com. I also want to thank Gary, doing an outstanding job every week. Keep up the good work. And since Turkey is in 2 weeks, we have a special podcast next week. We're going to talk about something exciting.
Yes, we will have a Turkish delight before the Turkish Grand Prix.
Excellent, Nas. Keep up the good work. So there you have it. Any final thoughts before we wrap it up?
Well, I'm really looking forward to the Turkish Grand Prix. I think it is Herman Tilke's finest creation. I mean, that's for sure. It will be sad there will be no spectators. But the race is like very early morning. I think it's like 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. Have you noticed that?
Yes, I've noticed it, Nasser. I'm not happy about it, Nasser.
Well, I'll tell you what I would like to see. We have like, what, 4 races remaining? 4 or 5? This is what I would like to see, and I think it just might happen. I'd like to see, I don't have to go to the DNF chapel for this. I would like to see Lewis get 100 pole positions. He's already at 97. And I would like to see him get 95 Grand Prix wins. So we can have a century of Grand Prix wins. But by the time the European season starts next season, assuming it will be a regular season. I have my doubts on that deal, by the way.
Well, I'll pray for you, Nasser. I'll pray for Lewis and hope that he has the luck that it'll take to get him to those big numbers that you love so much. So keep up the good work, Nas. Thanks for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. I want to thank everyone who listens. I'll see you at the hot dog stand.
Thank you. Ciao, ciao.